And welcome back to Success Made to Last. I'm Rick Tokini. It's great to have you all back joining us again. And Tim Moore, my partner, has a very special guest. I just want to remind you about what our company is all about. Success Made to Last is a multimedia company focused on unleashing your full potential to create lives that truly matter. At the heart of the company are extraordinary curators of great stories and distributors of wisdom. Our number one responsibility, though, is to you, the listener, to help you grow to be the best version of yourself. Make sure and visit us today at successmadetolast.com for a dose of wisdom and lessons learned. Now here's Tim Moore.
We have Stuart Emery here today. Hello, Stuart. How are you?
Hello, Tim. Sounds like I wrote that copy. Creating a life that matters. I remember that subheadline.
We may have cribbed off of you. And for those who don't know, listening, this podcast has a tagline. It is creating a life that matters. And Stuart and I have known each other for, gosh, Stuart, it's now over 20 years.
It is.
And Stuart's a man who's mastered many domains, which we'll discuss in part today. We've known each other, as I said, for over 20 years, and we've published, I don't know, did we publish 7 or 8 books together, Stuart?
At least, yes.
And I can say without any hyperbole that Stuart is a person who's emblematic of the tagline, creating a life that matters, and he's enriched my life immeasurably. So, Stuart, I want to ask you to just take an overview. Give us an overview of your career journey from your early days in Australia, which we can still hear in your voice, to your many years here in the United States. So give us an overview of the things that you did and over that time.
Well, I was born in Sydney, Australia, and my father went off to participate in the war, which turned out to be a terminal event for him. He got hurt and came back. He was quite a bit older than my mother, and we lived for the first 10 or 11 years of my life in a place called Hazelbrook in the Blue Mountains, and pretty much in isolation, a couple of acres. We grew some of our own food. We were pretty much poor as choice. As church mouse, my mother and father were artists of the mostly starving variety, you understand. So anyhow, I won a scholarship to a fancy boarding school for the children of the wealthy run by the High Church of England, which was a horrible experience for me. I went to university, and I was interested in photography, and I ran the university newspaper with a fellow called Hughes, who wrote a book called The Fatal Shore. Bob Hughes was also, I think, the art critic for the New York Times or the New Yorker, one of those.
I didn't realize you knew that guy. He was a famous art historian and
correct.
Yeah, for years and years, published 5 or 6 New York Times bestsellers.
Right, and so one thing led to another. I figured that taking pin-up photographs of beautiful college students was much more fun than getting a PhD in economics. I dropped out and became hard to believe, I know. At that impressionable age, you know, you make interesting life decisions. But I took a couple of photographs and ended up in Vogue magazine. And so I thought, well, this is cool. So I became a fashion photographer, which you can't make money at, really. And then I became one of the best food photographers in Australia. And I moved from food photography to becoming one of the creative directors of J. Walter Thompson in Sydney, Australia. Moved from there to going into business with a fellow called Johnny Singleton, a very famous Australian. And it was a friend of Clyde Packer, the Packer family. We know about them. And that was a great relationship. And we had a client that was a fragrance and cosmetic manufacturer in America, owned by a fellow called William Penn Patrick. And it was a party plan marketing company, direct sales. And he believed in training his people. And so back in those days, training those people consisted of Lead the Field with Earl Nightingale, Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill, a fellow called Mac Maltz wrote a book on how the mind works, and the work of two Russians that developed this alpha brainwave theory. And so Patrick had all these courses. I took a number of the courses. He loved what we were doing for them in Australia in terms of advertising. invited me to the United States to do some work for him there. And I was going to take what was called a Mind Dynamics franchise, which was about altered states of awareness and consciousness. I was going to take the franchise back to Australia. But the star instructor was a fellow called Werner Erhard. And he was going to take over as president of Mind Dynamics. But he heard I was leading encounter groups in Australia because I'd also studied psychology and philosophy at the university. And so he asked me to lead a group for he and his staff. And it was on his birthday weekend in 1972 at the St. Francis Drake Hotel. I needed something to theme it on. So I went to the Town Hall Metaphysical Bookstore and found a little red book entitled Aliveness, Health, Wealth, Happiness, and Full Self-Expression. So Werner decided not to become president of Mind Dynamics, but to start his own thing, invited me to join. So I did a few months later, and it was called EST, and the promise of EST was be live fully alive. It was about aliveness. The theme of the program was aliveness, about health, wealth, happiness, and full self-expression.
And Stuart, if I can interrupt you, for those under a certain age out there, EST was world famous in the 70s. It was more or less the first of the California New Age self-improvement movements. Everybody who was anybody, celebrities and the like, went through EST. We can come back to that another time, but I did want to sort of put a coda on that. Stuart, continue.
Yes, and so EST ultimately morphed into Landmark Education, which is still probably the biggest organization doing this work to help people become the best version of themselves, because they're international in a lot of countries and doing really good work. EST was great. You know, the EST training was fantastic. It was great theater. I had some core ideas, which if people could grasp them, really enabled them to lead better lives. And so eventually, Werner and I looked at the world differently enough for us to part ways. And I started a thing called Actualizations with a woman named Carol Augustus, who had been running enrollment at EST. And so we started a thing called Actualizations, and we had offices in five or six U.S. cities and then one European city. We did that quite a few years, and then it kind of got old for both of us. I had lunch with Carolyn yesterday, and Carol and I talked about what we've done over the years. And, you know, we both got to the point where we can't keep this fresh anymore. And rather than just ritualize it like the church tends to do the things, we simply stopped. I took a sabbatical, then did some real estate deals, and then got involved in corporate consulting, which I love, because the problem with public workshops is people can come to a workshop and have an extraordinary experience, and then they go back to the same world they left. And as we said in one of our books, Tim, the environment always wins.
Yep.
Well, not always, but it is the way to bet. But in corporate work, you can take a work group or even a division, sometimes an entire company, and change the culture. And if you do that, people live differently and work differently in that culture. And Peter Drucker remarked once that culture eats strategy for breakfast. And we see this idea of getting the culture right true in the world of professional sports. As I read The Athletic, I see them talk about the culture at various football teams and what the 49ers have done and what Andy Reid's done at the Kansas City Chiefs. So we'll see how that plays out in a few days. And around the NBA, you find players want to go and work for organizations that have healthy cultures. So, you know, healthy culture start at home. If you're going to have a family, can your family culture be a healthy culture? And often that's not the case. And when Rick told me how many young people there are out there without two parents, just from single parent homes, really without role models or any education about how to live successfully in the world, it's just really a tragedy. And even when that is the case, I see how many people grow up with no skills and no wisdom and no real knowledge about how to live successfully. And I'm not just talking about making money. I was invited to a resort recently surrounded by very wealthy people. And I thought, you know what? Money can transform your standard of living overnight, but it can't transform your level of happiness. Because I remember the turning point for me in Australia was having been poor, I was successful enough to have made enough money to figure out that if I made more, it wouldn't make any difference because all of the things that I changed hadn't changed how I felt on the inside.
Right.
And that was really what propelled me down the path to say, okay, what's it all about, Alfie? And something more going on. And so the land in California in 1971, standing on the corner of Haight and Ashbury, where if you inhaled, you got high, just saying, I realized that there was something else going on. So anyhow, that's the short story.
And Stuart, you moved from 20 years or so of self-improvement to what I would like to call corporate improvement. And you worked at a company that wasn't terribly well known at the time. It was called MasterCard. What did you do there? Yes.
Well, we had a conversation about culture, and so we're sitting around the boardroom. There's a new CEO in town, a fellow called Gene Lockhart, very bright guy, getting up in the Bill Gates territory of IQ, and he was there with his new executive team and the old board, and they had just taken over. And I said, "What business do you think you're in?" And they all had a slightly different answer. I said, "Well, with all due respect, and actually I don't feel a whole lot of respect is due, you all disagree. And as such, you're in trouble." And Lockhart said, "Well, what business do you think we're in?" Mm-hmm. I said, "Well, it actually doesn't matter what business I think you're in a world where reality is perception is reality, I think people regard you or perceive that you're in the business of getting people further and further into debt, that buy more and more of what they don't need anyway to make them happy. And as such, you have no redeeming social value because the things that make you happy, money can't buy. They're kind of priceless. But, you can use your MasterCard for everything else." So, 6 months later, that became the MasterCard priceless campaign.
Well, Stuart, and it didn't just become the MasterCard priceless campaign. It became the most successful ad campaign in history.
Yeah, well, it was just, it's just one of those coincidences. I didn't have this whole strategic thing. I was just being an Australian smartass, which I'm really good at. And sometimes...
A member of the criminal class, right?
Well, that's true, actually. And so, sometimes you say something and somebody picks up on it. Because it wouldn't have gone anywhere if Gene Lockhart hadn't said, "Hey, that's pretty good, actually." And so he was the guy who drove it, who gave it to the ad people and developed into a campaign. But I think that's what people who do the work I do are good at. We just kind of look for the value in things. And we look about how do you rewrite the narrative? How do you rewrite your personal narrative? How do you rewrite your corporate narrative? How do you do these things? What ideas will make a difference? Because really, how you think about it all makes the difference. So, that was great. We had a wonderful time and people's lives got better. And what was curious, we put like 2,000, 2,500 people who worked with MasterCard through a workshop. It started out of 5 days and we cut it down to 3.5, I think. But those people used the principles at home and some of them learned to lead the program because we couldn't do it all ourselves. And those people who did that went on and had the spectacular lives. I mean, it was wonderful. I still get Christmas cards from them and letters from them. And, it was started 15, 20 years ago. So,
more than that, Stuart,
it's been a great journey, yeah. Tim. And, but if I had to condense what it's all about for me, it's what I really love is being around people who are world-class at what they do in any field.
Right.
Because I find out when you are with those people, it's a different conversation. So then what I love to do is to transfer those principles and impart those principles and offer those principles to people who want to be up to something. They're not world-class yet, but they'd like to be. They're not living successfully yet, but they realize it's up to them. People who are ready to stop blaming their lives on somebody else. I realize that, there really is something to this idea of personal responsibility, and it's not a burden, it's the greatest opportunity we have.
Stuart,
so I love to work with. Sorry.
Well, I'm sorry. I've interrupted you, but let me ask you, you know, you've been a world-class photographer, a world-class ad man, a world-class self-improvement guru. Many people refer to you in that case as the father of the modern human potential movement, a world-class corporate improvement guru, if you will, a best-selling author. And now, in the later years, a world-class coffee aficionado. You've attained mastery in all of these domains, many different domains. How's that possible? What allowed you to be able to do that? And I use the word mastery intentionally, of course. Why does mastery matter to us, and why does it matter to you?
So, you know, to say why does it matter to us, I think there's a fellow called Dreyfus, who was a professor of philosophy at UC Berkeley, who said, you know, the rationalists got it wrong. You know, Descartes said, I think, therefore I am. Those guys got it wrong, because you can't actually have a great experience of being alive through the use of your rational mind. And then a guy who wrote a book called, I'm losing the book, but the idea in the book was that think of a human being as an elephant with a rider. And the rider thinks he's in charge of the elephant, but the rider's only been around recently with the evolution of a conscious mind, but the more raw human experiences this in emotions and feelings, and that's been around forever since we roamed the Serengeti. And so the book was called The Righteous Mind. So Dreyfus said, you know, I think what people want out of life is a great experience of being alive. And what we realize is that the people who have found something they love to do and become really, really good at it live successfully. Now, success is a very complex term, and you know, you and I wrote a book on that, Tim. So,
yes.
What Dreyfus is saying is that the greatest opportunity is to express the divinity within us externally in the world with skill and artistry in a way that makes a contribution. So we're living a life of contribution. In other words, a life that makes a difference, a life that matters, rather than taking. Now, when I read Dreyfus, I realized I'd lived my life that way without knowing I was living my life that way. But it was simple for me. I just noticed I felt more alive and I felt better about myself as a person if I was curiously pursuing life, focusing on the things that stood out as being interesting to me. And I was fortunate enough to figure out a way to monetize them often enough to end up living very nicely. So, but over a period of time, you know, I began to turn that into some kind of, not a system, but a deeper understanding. And I think when we did that book, Success Built to Last, we had interviewed 200 or 300 of the world's most successful and famous people, not necessarily financially famous, although we had the requisite number of billionaires. But we had people like Desmond Tutu and Nelson Mandela, Maya Angelou, and what we realized in a book, Tim, and then we had that wonderful researcher who helped us do a worldwide success survey, and we got tens of thousands of responses. And pretty much the data was all the same. The people wanted to live successfully. They didn't think it was just about material success. They thought it was about doing something you loved really well, and they thought it was about making a difference in the world. And what we found out is that all of the people in that book had the same set of principles they lived by. So it's that old story, if you show me how you do one thing, I'll show you how you do everything. So what we found is if you develop an ability to become world-class in a field, then those skills and that ability is transferable. It can transfer to the next thing you want to do. And so what becomes important at that point is, do you love it? Because if you don't love it, you won't make the effort that you need to make to keep getting good at it. And so that's kind of where I've landed. And I found that I am a seriously, or rather, well, seriously too, but a serially curious guy. I get curious about this and curious about that. And that's how I've lived my life, and it's turned out pretty well, actually.
Well, I think I'd say so. Well, Stuart, we're going to wrap up for today, but as you well know, and what the people listening don't know, is you're going to be a regular on this podcast because of the depth and wealth and breadth of really knowledge about how to create a life that matters. So we'll be doing this again, and we'll be talking to you again. But thank you for today very much, Stuart. And I know you're off to L.A. later this today, so say hello to Joni for me.
I will. You know, it's my 79th birthday, which probably is not good for your listeners to know because I don't like listening to old people. But my father... My father-in-law is 99. We have the same birthday, the same Myers-Briggs typology, and the same Enneagram typology. So as somebody once remarked to Joni, you know, Sigmund Freud would have a thing or two to say about that.
Absolutely. Listen,
anyhow, guys, I love what you're doing, and I think it's really, really, really important. And I urge listeners to stay tuned to this series because the world wants you to live a great life. That is a gift of the world. So stay tuned. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Stuart. Be good.
Thank you, Stuart. When I grow up, I want to be like him. What what a guy. To be a serial, curious person and develop abilities to become world-class in one field and then transfer it to another. Thus, the secret sauce. This guy thinks differently, and yes, he is our poster child for Success Made to Last. And when you listen to this show and our entire network of guests, that's what you're going to glean from Success Made to Last. I am personally motivated right now and want to go out and kill it. And so that's if a podcast and its content can change you, that's why we're doing this. Hey, thanks for joining us. We'll be back with another Success Made to Last. And until we talk again, remember to stay curious and become world-class and create a life that matters. Have a great week. So thanks to our sponsor, Edward Jones. They are our trusted financial advisor. And Edward Jones has been instrumental in helping us pivot our lives built around health, happiness, travel, and adding value to other people's lives. You can contact our advisor, Serban Marasini, by emailing him at serban.marasine@edwardjones.com. And thanks again to their sponsorship of this program.